It's March 12, 2014, and welcome to another edition of Bite Marks Cafe, where we serve you the first bite of today's technology. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ran Ozawa, and as we celebrate the 25th birthday of the World Wide Web, we'll cover the Geek Beat here once again on Hawaii Public Radio.
And first, we'll look at the latest tech news and happenings in Hawaii and beyond. Then joining us today is Brian Dote to tell us about something new happening over at Mid-Pacific Institute.
Finally, we will talk to Sunny Bagawalia and Keone Kali about changes in the Office of Information Management and Technology. We'd, of course, love your questions and comments as part of the conversation. Be ready to call in or tweet. But first, the headlines.
Well, the State Department of Education last week announced a comprehensive sustainable energy program that calls for the installation of sustainable energy generating equipment in all public schools statewide. The five-year initiative is called Kahe, named after a snare used by the Hawaiian god Maui to capture the sun. In addition to the facility upgrades, Kahe will incorporate an educational component designed to involve school staff and students using real-time data on clean energy systems to incorporate into the curriculum.
The five-year program will turn school campuses into living laboratories, emphasizing science, technology, engineering, and math. Hands-on learning will come through green energy simulators, school contests, and locally relevant lessons about real-world scenarios. The program comes after a pilot program launched in 2011 when photovoltaic systems were installed at four high schools on Oahu. That pilot expanded the following year to 28 more schools and all 15 schools on Kauai.
Well, with this year's expansion to 47 schools, Kahe is now being rolled out statewide by the department's Office of School Facilities and Support Services. The department says that it will be a pioneer among the nation's school districts and among the state's foremost environmental stewards. Of course, Kahe will also help reduce energy consumption and cost at all the 255 DOE schools, with on-site energy generation and aggressive energy efficiency and conservation measures, including demand response. Now, of course, this is something that has been in the works for a while, and it's kind of an obvious thing because if the state is trying to achieve, you know, their sort of Hawaii Clean Energy Initiative, it would be good to get all the schools on, you know, sort of a alternative energy source.
Right, and I think the specifics of this announcement was because they had selected one of the main partners to deploy it, and that's Chevron Energy Solutions that are going to be doing the implementation. And although they're talking about all of these schools statewide, this first phase is still three schools, one on Maui, one on the Big Island, and one on Oahu. But certainly schools can cut costs and perhaps invest their money elsewhere if they're getting solar energy. And I know last week Green Path Technologies did their solar-powered air conditioning. I think maybe they should talk because air conditioning is also a hot topic in the DOE.
Right. So, you know, I think this is going to be kind of a long, well, five-year project. But for each school to have the design and to get the new technology, I think it's going to be a timely rollout.
Yeah, and as far as the name Kahe, it also means to absorb knowledge or skill, and that makes sense. But I do like the tool that captured the sun on Haleakala. I think that's pretty cool.
Nice images.
Speaking of electricity, Hawaiian Electric Company also announced yesterday that it will begin installing smart grid hardware for 5,200 customers on Oahu as part of its ongoing grid modernization efforts. It's only the first phase of a rollout that's expected to expand statewide by 2018. The smart grid program will integrate a communications network, sensors, automated systems, and new power meters that will allow the utility to more efficiently monitor and manage its electricity supply, as well as provide more information to consumers.
Well, this is the first phase of a plan which would develop smart grids across Oahu in Maui County and on Hawaii Island in 2018. The company says its first deployments were chosen because of the mix of customers and geographic terrain. Neighborhoods covered in the first batch of installations include Moanalua Valley and portions of Pearl City, Diamond Head, Kaimuki, Kahala, and Waikiki. There will be no additional charge for replacement of the meters.
The company also notes that customers do not need to be present while their meter is changed, and also that customers can defer participation if they so choose. But by participating, they will get access to a customized online web portal that will provide frequent updates on their energy usage. Company spokesman Dan Giovanni said in a statement, "Our state needs modern electric grids to further improve service, provide customers with more choices, and integrate more low-cost renewable energy to reduce Hawaii's dependency on expensive imported oil."
Well, you know, this is a good move for Hawaiian Electric to sort of, you know, get into this whole smart grid all the way to the consumers. And I hope it's one step closer to getting to the green button where you actually are able to see what your consumption is like on a basically real-time basis.
Right. I know that Kanu Hawaii had been working with Hawaii Energy on certain pilots, and there's basically, and even the Energy Accelerator. I mean, there's a lot of attention pointed at these technologies. We participated in one of those pilots at our house in Mililani, and it was neat to have a dashboard there in our living room that told us what was running at any given time. And being conscious of that changes your behavior. My mom would be like, what is going on? Is the heater on? It's not supposed to be on at this time. You know, why is this reading here? So I think that smart grids is not just to benefit the utility, but the whole community in terms of energy mm-hmm. use.
And of course, you know, the meter that currently exists at your house, the one with the little flywheel that goes around and around, I mean, that's technology that's been around for at least 5 decades.
I know. It's certainly
so it's,
not
you know,
modern.
High time for a change.
Although, again, on Kauai, for example, there's been some resistance to the smart meters, in part for privacy reasons, in part because of the energy or communications transmissions. Mm-hmm. But we'll see how they do here on Oahu.
Well, next up, the Planned Advanced Technology Solar Telescope has a new name and another milestone to celebrate as its construction continues atop Haleakala on Maui. The ATST is now the Daniel K. Inouye Solar Telescope in honor of the late senator who was credited for his support of astronomy. The project got the go-ahead from the state in November of 2012 to begin construction with 22 institutions involved in its deployment. And this week, equipment manufacturers in Spain announced that the telescope's dome is ready for delivery.
The dome, which will house the solar telescope, cost over $4.5 million and was commissioned by the U.S. National Solar Observatory. It's the telescope's designated principal investigator. But first, it must be carefully dismantled and shipped from where it was built. Construction of the dome, which was handled by Spanish equipment firms Hilfa and Gometegui, took place in the town of Basauri, located in Basque Country in northern Spain. Getting it here will require more than 60 shipping containers and 3 separate shipments.
Well, the dome measures 80 feet in diameter and height and weighs 600 tons. And installation will happen late next year and will require precision measurements in millimeters. While most telescope domes are stationary, the solar telescope will turn along with the instrument within. The Daniel K. Inouye Solar Telescope will have a 4-meter primary mirror, about 13 feet in diameter, and will allow astronomers to see details on the sun's surface down to about 30 kilometers or 19 miles. Now, you know, Haleakala has been home for a lot of solar telescopes, and this is going to be a really kind of cool addition. I mean, the dome that you can see pictures of it on the web, I mean, it's a pretty cool-looking, you know, structure. But it's all the way in Spain, and they have to dismantle it and bring it all the way to
I mean, that definitely says something about the international reach and the astronomy is not a local thing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that they were the vendor, that they had the equipment to put together something this sophisticated. And so getting it from Spain to Hawaii, no problem. It's the construction. It's the technology to build it that was really key. And yeah, it's going to be at the 3,000 meter or 9,000 foot elevation mm-hmm. up there. I thought it was interesting that this dome does move with everything else, you know, rather than just the door or something like that. But they're saying it has to move very slow. It's almost imperceptible to sight. But yeah, they've been tracking it and its construction on the internet. So if you Google, I guess now, the Daniel K. Inouye Solar Telescope or the ATST, you can see how sophisticated this process is. Mm-hmm. And they're not even going to install it until, be done installing until like 2015. So even getting it here by maybe October, getting it up to the summit and putting it in place is a very long process.
Right.
All right. And finally, the University of Hawaii is one of the founding partners in a $5.3 million National Science Foundation Award, which is focused on advanced cyber infrastructure. The 2-year program will focus both on high-performance computing systems as well as education and outreach. The goal is to create a national network of facilitators for advanced cyber infrastructure. And with the initial project grant, UH will be able to hire 2 such facilitators for 2 years. Each of the 6 campuses will host the staff.
Well, in addition to UH, other partners include Harvard University, Clemson University in South Carolina, the University of Southern California, the University of Utah, and the University of Wisconsin. Each will have facilitators that are fully embedded in their respective technology support environments. Together, the project team will develop and push the adoption of models and strategies that will leverage the expertise and experience of its members, whether it be in visualization, massive data storage, high-performance networks, or cutting-edge computing hardware and software.
The hope is to work with researchers and faculty who traditionally have not benefited from high-performance computing, but who recognize that their work requires access to more computational power that can be provided by their desktop machines. David Lassner, interim president at UH, said in a statement, Data-intensive science and engineering is a major thrust for the Hawaii Innovation Initiative, and this is exactly what we need to help many of our gifted faculty and students take their scholarship to the next level.
Well, of course, this goes well with the $41 million IT center that just got, opened up not too long ago, maybe a couple months ago. Beautiful facility. And of course, you know, Hawaii has always been sort of on this kind of leading edge with high-performance computing, especially with the Maui supercomputer in Kihei. But, you know, this starts to solidify our role in really advancing this sort of cyber infrastructure.
Right, and you look at the fields that we are leaders in, astronomy, earth, atmospheric, ocean sciences, biomedicine, all things that generate massive amounts of data. Mm-hmm. And so if you can basically focus on these advanced cyber infrastructure projects and you get computing power to more people, I mean, there are many departments at UH, I would imagine, that don't know how to plug into the new IT center or know how to plug into the Maui supercomputer. So there is an outreach component of this as well to say, you know, it's great that you're running these massive Excel spreadsheets and pivot tables on your 10-year-old PC, but maybe we can work with you and help that go a little faster.
And of course, you know, a lot of them are very interested in big data, and of course, we want to get them to look at open data.
That's true.
Well, here's a couple of events heading ahead on the tech calendar. On Thursday, March 27th, Think Tech Hawaii will present the 2014 Legislative Midterm Update, featuring a panel of leading state finance officials, including Senator David Ige, Representative Aaron Ling Johansson, Representative Sylvia Luke, and Calbert Young. The forum takes place at the downtown Laniakea YWCA, and that'll be March 27th from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And to register, you can go to thinktechhawaii.com.
And a final reminder, and this is only if you missed Bert and I dancing on television yesterday morning. This Saturday brings Honolulu's first official Mini Maker Fair is taking place at Iolani School. There you'll be able to meet makers of every stripe, ranging from circuit benders to 3D printers to drone flyers, even knitters and Ghostbusters. You can head on down to the Sullivan Center for Innovation and Leadership from noon to 5 p.m. Again, that is this Saturday. For more information or to RSVP, let them know you're coming. You can go to MakerFair with an E, Honolulu.com.
I hear they're almost up to 500 attendees. So
yeah, it'll be a great event.
Monumental. Now joining us here in the studio is Brian Dote to tell us about his new role over at the Mid-Pacific Institute. Welcome to the show, Brian.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Now, you know, Brian, we've had you on our show for many times. I mean, in various capacities. I know you had previously worked at Apple, kind of maybe another lifetime ago, but have been very active as a mobile app developer, Tapiki. And now you've kind of...
What's with this day job?
Yeah. Why all of a sudden you're going into the regular sort of 8 to 5, maybe it's not 8 to 5, but, you know, now, yeah, regular day job.
Yeah, well, it's... It's one of those opportunities when presented to me that I couldn't imagine not doing. Mm-hmm. There's a few jobs you have in your life where you, once you hear about it, you think to yourself, wow, how can I not do that? That's everything I want to do. And this sort of chief innovation officer position is exactly that. Everything about it are things that I find inspirational or I'm passionate about or I'm excited about. And so it was a sort of a natural evolution for me to take on a role such as this, and I'm really excited.
Well, we want to be the first to congratulate you.
Oh, thank you.
And of course, when do you actually take on this new role?
So officially, I start August 1st. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a school, so they operate on a school calendar. But I'm slowly sneaking my way into campus and getting more involved on a day-to-day basis. Basically, from here on out, I'll be more and more involved.
Now, you're a dad, and even when you were working with apps, and you'll probably continue to do that, because one of the most important parts of this role, I would imagine, is to not become an academic theoretical person, but to still be on the ground and doing real things and meeting with real people. But it seemed certainly that education was an interest. Mid-Pacific Institute has been doing a lot. My dad is involved with their board, and he always tells me and sends me notices about their iPad program and this program and that program. Where does Mid-Pacific Institute stand right now that it seemed fit to create a position called Chief Innovation Officer?
I think as far as MPI is concerned, there's pockets of innovation happening everywhere. It's sort of one of those situations where every rock you look under, there's innovation happening. And with the new president that just joined, Dr. Paul Turnbull, you know, the vision of this school is to take this innovation and carry it forward. And it's a great time because we have, for like you mentioned, the one-to-one iPad program. You know, 4 years ago, the first iPad came out. I remember standing in line with you guys, even.
Right.
And we're standing in line for these iPads. And 2 years later, MPI had one in every student's hands. You know, that's 1,500 iPads. And so you can see where the school sort of bleeds innovation already. And it's a perfect time to bring someone in that can connect all of these dots, all of these things that are happening throughout the campus, and sort of carry it forward, but with a perspective from the outside. And I'm not an educator. I started teaching a class, and now I know why I'm not an educator. But I have a different perspective, and I think I bring that to the table.
Now, you know, when you first told me that you're the CIO, I kind of thought maybe it was the chief information officer. Now, when somebody's a chief information officer, and we'll talk more about, you know, being a chief information officer with our guests later on today, but they're more involved with sort of the implementation of information systems within, let's say, the campus. But as an innovation officer, you're really kind of more involved with looking at perhaps policy that helps to create environments for creativity. It's sort of a different kind of view, right, from implementation to expressive, you know, and creating sort of creative environments.
Yeah, but it's cool. It's sort of, you have one foot in each side.
Mm-hmm.
So you cannot have a successful tech implementation without an understanding of the IT side of it. You know,
mm-hmm.
we need to implement these programs. We need to be doing these things that are required to be successful. And so one foot will always be in that world. But the other foot is exciting. It's, well, what are the technologies out there? How can we use them? How can we leverage them in the classroom? And it's sort of very forward thinking. It's very, very creative and innovative. But it's always grounded in the IT side of it. It's still a technological position. So it's still grounded in technology. And because of that, I think I straddle both ends of that
mm-hmm,
fence.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when Mid-Pacific announced your appointment, they did, of course, as we did, think very highly of your background with Apple, with mobile app development. And I think, again, you are bringing a specific skill set and set of passions to it. So although it's not quite an administration, you know, I am kind of curious, when you see the new school year finally start in August, after you've done a lot of this getting to understand what you're getting into, what would you say are your passions, your priorities, and the kinds of things that you are excited to bring to the leadership at Mid-Pacific?
So the thing that I'm really passionate and excited about is forming a little Topeki within the organization, within the school. And when I say that, what I mean is enabling students to become entrepreneurs, to build mobile applications, to learn how to code, and to build companies that, you know, potentially monetize the product and become successful financially. And so what I want to do is, from the kindergarten, you know, from the elementary, start introducing kids to coding, which is I'm teaching a class right now to teach third and fifth graders coding. But you carry that forward all the way to the high school, where we can have kids and students, you know, building real world apps and shipping real world products and possibly making, you know, real world companies.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to foster that environment, and I want to build that.
So I suspect that you will play a key role in actually influencing maybe some curriculum.
Yeah. I think that from that perspective, it's more about understanding what the curriculum is and where we can leverage technology as a toolbox.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's I don't want technology for technology's sake. I mean, having an iPad in a student's hands doesn't mean much. It's
mm-hmm.
what are you going to do with that iPad? You know, what are you going to do with that window on the world? And so my job is to see what's out there and figure out where the intersection is between the cool tech that we all know and love and what a teacher is trying to instill in their students. And then where those two overlap is where we got opportunity.
Well, there's definitely a lot of focus on innovation in our local schools, in our public schools, and in our independent schools. And we know we are going to have you back
mm-hmm.
closer to your taking office to kind of talk more about that. But if anybody wanted to learn more about what's happening at Mid-Pacific, where can they go?
They should go to our website and check it out. There's new posts, new blog posts almost every day. Either some of it is, you know, sports and school related, but there's a lot of tech there as well.
And that's at midpac.edu.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
And of course, I know you have many Twitter accounts reflecting Mid Pacific, so we will definitely put that on the show notes. Thanks, Brian, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's what's been happening this week. We'll take a short break, and when we return, we'll be joined by Sunny Bagawalia and Keone Kali to tell us about the IT transformation plan over at the Office of Information Management and Technology.
What is the current scorecard for the IT transformation, and what lies ahead? We'd, of course, love your thoughts or questions as part of the conversation. You can give us a call at 941-3689, toll-free from the Neighbor Islands. That's 877-941-3689.
And, of course, we're live, so we're monitoring Twitter. You can tweet us at Bite Marks or at Hawaii. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
The House reprimand of Faye Hanohano for her unprofessional outbursts may have temporarily ended an unpleasant event, but is it just a band-aid for racial tensions that are still simmering beneath the happy picture of the Aloha State we tell ourselves and export to the world? We'll find out how our panel feels about it. Join us Thursday at 5 for Town Square.
I'll turn it on in the living room to hear Prairie Home Companion or just to have the beautiful classical music on in the background. I'm an addict of Morning Edition, and when I'm fortunate enough to be going home during the hours when All Things Considered is aired, I always tune into that as well. I mean, it's the preset on my radio dial in my car.
Member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. Radio with vision. Listen and see.
Welcome back to Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa.
And joining us today is Sunny Bagawalia and Keone Kali. Sunny is the newly appointed Chief Advisor for Technology and Cybersecurity, reporting directly to Governor Abercrombie.
Keone, meanwhile, as reported previously here on Bite Marks Cafe, is now the new Chief Information Officer for the State of Hawaii, succeeding Sunny.
And of course, does this transition spell a new phase for OIMT and the IT transformation? We'd love to hear your questions and comments. And, of course, that number to call is 941-3689 on Oahu or 1-877-941-3689. From the neighbor islands, Sunny and Keone, want to welcome you both to Bite Marks Cafe.
Yeah, mahalo.
Mahalo.
Nice
aloha
to be here,
to everyone.
Aloha, everybody.
You know, Sunny, we have been lovingly following your career here on Bite Marks Cafe ever since you came into Hawaii. And, I'm proud to say that I've gotten to know you and really enjoyed all the things that you've pioneered and visioned for State of Hawaii. Now, in the IT transformation plan, and this is kind of something that you took the bull by the horns, 3 years ago and really put together, how would you start to articulate what you've achieved over the last 3 years?
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it, Bert. Again, like I said, just glad to be here. I think this has just been a tremendous calling for all of us, and really it's an achievement by all of us in Hawaii. Yes, I think we should all be proud. This was all the 18 departments and all the counties, everybody working together to kind of come up with this plan, which I might add won a national award, So mm-hmm. Hawaii can do it. And so I think we were the only state to get this kind of award. But the transformation plan is all about first getting a baseline of where we are and then establishing a to-be vision where we should be, going from a paperless environment, a paper environment, to going to a paperless digital world where we can do everything online, instead of waiting in line. So I think all of those strategies we kind of put together in a vision. But then you have to also have how do you bridge the gap to, have a transition and sequencing plan. So that's mm-hmm. all in the plan. Mm-hmm. So we published the plan. So first we published a baseline assessment in 2011. Then we published the transformation plan in 2012. And then we started implementing projects. So we implemented and started, implementing all the ways to show that we can not only implement pilots to bridge the gap, but how do we go forward and actually get everybody together? All the lovely concepts that in Hawaii have gone on for so many years, Laulima, Lokahi, all those things working together to strive for the summit, yeah? Kulia Ukunu'u, yeah? So I've been picking up all the language, bro. So it's all about getting people together to work together. At the end of the day, this challenge is big. We are 30 to 40 years behind when we came here, but mm-hmm. We are now caught up in some areas and we are making a lot of progress. So that transformation plan laid that out. And then recently, I've also put a report out, which was, again, done by everybody. So this is a collaborative effort of all of us. And the report, the annual report for the past 3 years, clearly shows that against all these three strategies of reengineering the business, has made a lot of progress. Establishing a strong and secure infrastructure, and CUNY has a big part in making that happen. It has been made tremendous progress in that area. And then also improving transparency and accountability, which I know you have a strong support for, mm-hmm. has been great as well. So we have improved in all those areas, and all of that is on the plan at oimt.hawaii.gov, and the annual report is all published openly and transparently.
Mm-hmm. So. And I think it's fair to say that the scope is pretty large and, in fact, is longer than any specific administration. It's a 12-year plan, I think, and it has a far horizon to to head toward. And as you said, there was a lot of baselining and trying to set the lay the groundwork. And it sounded like, and especially in the announcement of your new appointment, Keone, was that we've done a lot of the vision, we've done a lot of the plan, and now we're moving to implementation and execution. But it is a significant, I would say, not to put you on the spot, a passing of the torch in some respect. And I'm kind of curious about where you see that rubber hitting the road with this handoff, and what are the first big things that we can look forward to with this plan being executed?
Well, I think the groundwork has already been laid in the last 2.7 years, really, of this effort. It has been a really collaborative effort. It involves, you know, people, processes, technology, funding, and, you know, a lot of cooperation with the agencies and departments and what their workloads are and what they're willing to do next. We've had significant improvements in our infrastructure that were just critical that had to be addressed. So what we've tried to do in parallel to the planning process and to have achievements is pick off the low-hanging fruit of the things we can implement now, build that momentum and success in small projects, and start to build ourselves into the medium-sized projects and the larger-sized projects, mm-hmm. like ERP and tax system modernization, some of these big things that are out there for us to do that give us a lot of efficiencies. But we have shown quite a few accomplishments in the annual report, which we'll see, including software savings, network bandwidth increases, server virtualization, cost-saving measures, training of staff, getting people built up to be able to handle these new responsibilities and these new skills.
So, Keone, I mean, I know you've sort of under Sunny's leadership, were very much involved with the implementation of many of these fairly large projects, and of course, you know, the kind of projects that you have to implement, I mean, they're not 1-year projects, they're not even 2-year projects. I mean, they're multi-year projects. Can you give us a sense of some of the larger ones? I know there's a tax modernization, there's all this business process re-engineering. What are some of the projects that are in stage right now, and sort of where are they in terms of their timeline?
Well, we have to lay, you know, there's a foundational element to all of these projects or these major applications that come in. Mm-hmm. They're always implemented in phases, but you have to have that underlying base infrastructure in order to accomplish these things. That includes the network and the data centers, mm-hmm. and the services, mm-hmm. and the security and things for all the health IT systems and the tax system modernization, the enterprise resource planning right. project and financial systems. So we've been working on that, and now we're to the point where these RFPs and these projects are coming to fruition, and we're going to start taking them on in small phases. But we're really, the challenge is you take a 12-year plan, which really does take that time to transform the culture and the entire business practices of the state of Hawaii, mm-hmm. into an online environment. And you got to break it into, you know, what can you get done in 4 years?
Right.
Mm-hmm. What can you get done in 2 years? And so really the art, it's an art form in terms of redescribing the projects and the scopes down to very small, digestible elements for the staff and the consultants and everybody to understand, and then be able to get some success under their belt and keep moving forward in a very measured and but very dogmatic way. Mm-hmm.
We're talking to Sunny Bagawalia, the governor's new chief advisor for technology and cybersecurity, as well as Keone Kali, the chief information officer for the state of Hawaii, about the Office of Information Management Technology and its IT transformation. If you've got questions or comments, you can give us a call at 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands, or reach us on Twitter. Now, Sunny, I know when you were coming in and you were very visible and getting out into the community and gathering stories, and you always told many anecdotes like the VAX system in the DOE that they had to buy parts off eBay to keep running.
It's still there. Yeah.
Right. But now you've been able to bring a lot of these things online, and I think you might have more stories to tell about small successes. And I know that we've been tracking, for example, the Hawaii Broadband Initiative, and as from my view, that seems to have moved forward quite a bit.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think as Keone has mentioned, the whole idea here was if your readers can, and listeners can really focus on the three strategies, you know, transform the business, you know, modernize the technology, and improve transparency and accountability. So three strategies. We've kept that from the start, and then we put in top 10 programs in those areas. And so, for example, under the infrastructure area, Hawaii Broadband Initiative was a key area. So the whole area, first of all, you know, we have done a broadband mapping study with DCCA being a lead and others participating. In fact, CUNY had a big role in that as well when he was at Pacific Disaster Center. The idea is that this broadband study allows us to see, you know, what are some of the areas that we have coverage or no, we don't have coverage, or what are some of the challenges and so on and so forth. So that's something we have done. There are a lot of grants here already underway with UH and other things that's going on. There's a public library system laptop program. All these things are small little things going on. They're all kind of contributing to the larger success. But we're also trying to make sure that the Trans-Pacific cable coming into Hawaii, mm-hmm. you know, is updated. So a study that Department of Defense did with us, also all participating with DBET and DC, you know, DCCA also, but OIMT and also Defense Department, made the point that, hey, we need some money, so legislature gave us some money, so allowed us to secure our two landing sites, but also look at some pilots that we can be doing, which CUNY is going to be doing here. So my point is all of these things allow us to kind of go forward. We also did a pilot with the USDA where we got a special waiver from FCC that I got, and I got my buddy from U.S. Department of Agriculture, CIO, and we did a pilot here to allow in the 700 megahertz public safety spectrum, allow 100 megabits 4G LTE pilot in Big Island. Oh. All of these things, I think, is part of the approach. But we have a ways to go. We really have to invest in this because, unfortunately, 75% of all the population in Hawaii is rural, in the rural areas. I mean, in the urban areas, but in the rural areas, we only have 25% of the population or less, and we don't have coverage in that area. So we got to take care of that situation.
Well, you know, a while back, it might have been before, Sunny, you coming on board, I mean, the governor had a gigabit initiative, and the gigabit initiative was to try to get gigabit to people's homes by the year 2018. And then I don't hear too much about Gigabit Initiative anymore. I kind of hear it transformed into something like the Hawaii Broadband Initiative. Maybe, Keone, I mean, maybe you can shed some light on, is Gigabit really a realistic objective, or, you know, is it sort of now kind of more into the realm of just broadband?
I think the Gigabit Initiative, you know, as it's become the Hawaii Broadband Initiative, mm-hmm. the goal of the Hawaii Broadband Initiative is to deliver gigabit ubiquitous services throughout the islands. And for some of what that supports is our key public safety critical communications, our E911 systems, connecting to the national grid with FirstNet and these other projects that are coming down the pike in the next 3 years. So it is critically important that we have that kind of connectivity pushed out to all the neighborhoods and to everywhere. Private industry has been stepping up as of late, and they have are working to land cables here. They're working to increase fiber penetration into the neighborhood nodes so we can have that kind of bandwidth, because currently our bandwidth in Hawaii is limited, and we are limited by the number of cables that connect to the mainland or Asia, you know, for our internet connectivity, as well as the inter-island cables that are all everything's going end of life by 2025. So the idea is, how do we improve our bandwidth? How do we improve our reliability and resiliency for these things that require critical communications? Because every industry in Hawaii uses the same fiber to get out, and it's a finite amount of bandwidth. So as we see more traffic, which is increasing at a rate of nearly 5% a month, on the networks going to the mainland, on the internet, as well as, you know, storage capacity increases that are required for information sharing and information storage. People are using more of these applications, you know, for video and data and things that run off your cell phones and your toaster ovens and everything else that has connected to the network in your house.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's increasing at an alarming rate, and we will outstrip that capacity. So the goal is still gigabit to the home. I think right now we're at a rate of, you know, being able to deliver 100 meg to different areas, you know, and it's growing. But, you know, we're working.
Well,
on
you
it.
Know, I know both HawaiianTel and Oceanic announced, you know, some pretty hefty new services. I think HawaiianTel just announced their 500 megabit service, but of course, it's not really something that we, or at least me, can't, you know, purchase. but I think, you know, I guess the question that I had is, has the pressure that you've instituted as a result of the broadband initiative influenced, you think, any of the commercial providers?
Well, let me just say that I think this is a collaborative effort. At the end of the day, industry has to have some business case to make this thing happen. So it costs quite a bit to mm-hmm. for every 25 mm-hmm. people, there's a certain amount of $1 million that are spent for making that happen. So in some rural areas, you know, the case study is not there yet. We'll have to take, as CUNY mentioned, also some public-private partnerships, also some federal government initiatives like FirstNet and others to improve our public safety. But we got to connect all this stuff together. So, for example, we have gigabit some places on the island, so we can do it. Also, AT&T and others have announced some things where you can get to 100 megabit 4G LTE right today. So it's available. It's set, the question is, it's not available ubiquitously, mm-hmm. and it's not affordable in some areas. So we just got to keep working that. So they're doing that, but I think that momentum is going. I think the pressure is just the fact that this needs to be a collaborative effort in some areas. And in some areas, if the, you know, like I said, 80% of the population is in the 20% urban areas and all that, let's take care of that first. And in some of the other community anchor institutions, perhaps we can look at that. And I think all of those strategies are being looked at. Mm-hmm. But I believe Hawaii Broadband Initiative is very key to a digital future. Because if Hawaii is going to be the crossroads of the Pacific in the digital age, we have to be connected to the world with the Trans-Pacific. The intra-island fiber is pretty good. And then within intra-island, within each of the islands, you know, that capacity in the rural versus the urban density areas, we just got to make a business case in some areas. And perhaps community anchor institutions could be a hybrid approach in some areas to, you know, take care of underserved areas.
Right, and we just had Kamehameha Schools on to talk about their 9-block Wi-Fi deployment in Kaka'ako, and I think community initiatives like that certainly are a good thing as well. Now, Sunny, one of the other things you mentioned is a target or a goal of the IT transformation was the transparency piece, and the piece that, you know, full disclosure, Bert and I with Hawaii Open Data are really into making government information more widely available, both to help make government more accountable, but to help citizens understand their government better. So on that scorecard, how do you feel you've progressed over these 3 years?
I think we've done some tremendous work in this area. I think, first of all, you know, on data.hawaii.gov, we have launched over 1,000 data sets, 1,144 to be exact, but who's counting? but as you know, that just means there's a lot more data out there that should be freed. And as you know, with the Open Data Bill, which you had a lot to do with, so thank you, I think we need to keep that going. And I believe in sunshine being the first best disinfectant, as Justin Brandeis said, and we need to keep that going. I think we also put 101 online services. We've put 63 mobile apps that are on there. We've also launched transparency.hawaii.gov. You can take a look at that. There's a checkbook app also. I mean, so all of these things, we're trying to launch them to make sure the information is out there. So we have put the tools and infrastructure in place to make it happen. Now what we're working on is trying to get all the, should we say, the internal departments to kind of release all the information with appropriate, enough quality to get it out. And I think that's where we are right now. And well, I feel like Hawaii has a very, very good future. And I think I'm sure you're going to talk about what you've accomplished in terms of Hawaii even being an open node at some point. I think all of these things are positive things for Hawaii. And I feel like innovation is not just the domain of government. Innovation is the domain of public who wants to improve their daily lives, and they can use open data to make that happen.
Well, the thing, Sunny, is, you know, open data has largely been championed by you in the office of OIMT. And, you know, it really helps to have somebody inside that's really promoting it and supporting it and articulating it. What I want to ask you is, in this transition, do you see that same level of commitment for open data from inside the state?
Yeah, I think so. I think it just takes a little time because I think there are a lot of things to do. You know, CUNY and I have mentioned, we have inherited a lot of pukas all over the place. We're trying to fix it as much as we can. So, but first, you got to have a solid foundation. That's why CUNY's, I think, strategy is a good one. Which that's why when I, you know, brought him into government, and I told him up front, I said, there are plenty of pukas around here. You know, I told him and tried to dissuade him just to see what his commitment was. And his commitment was great. He said, no, I'm a warrior for Hawaii. So that's the kind of person we got here. So he's great. He's great for Hawaii in making sure the solid infrastructure is there. But yes, the transparency and accountability, you'll need folks like Karen Higa, James Lum, CUNY, glad to help in my role. But that's what it's going to take. The champions, but also it requires you to put the pressure on us continually from the public to make sure the public is engaging in this and looking at these apps and saying, okay, I want this, and making it go forward. Like, for example, we have myhawaii.gov, which is your government, your way. You can get your own dashboard and make sure you can track things you want. That's the kind of back office interaction that you can do from a website anywhere, anytime, mm-hmm. on a mobile device. That's the way the world is working. And that's what we should
Well, I like
on.
The idea that, you know, you've looked at us as, you know, me and Ryan and the public in general to help push on the state to continue to be diligent about making data available. I want to talk a little bit more about that. We'll hold that thought. We'll be right back after this short break to continue our conversation with Sunny Bagawalia and Keone Kali about the state's IT transformation plan.
How will the CIO continue to interact with the Chief Advisor for Technology and Cybersecurity? And of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can give us a call at 941-3689 or from the Neighbor Islands, 877-941-3689. You can also catch us on Twitter. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
The sale of one enslaved man in Virginia to a sugarcane plantation owner in Louisiana illustrates the rise of American capitalism.
He was sold in New Orleans for $950. His purchase price in Virginia was $450. And you can see in that difference the reason why the slave trade was so profitable.
I'm Sarah McConnell. Join me for With Good Reason, Thursdays at 6:30 on Hawaii Public Radio.
I have got you under my skin.
Join us Sunday at 5 for Sinatra, the Man and the Music. On our next show, Sinatra records the final songs for his album Songs for Young Lovers, and we'll tune in to Sinatra's radio drama Rocky Fortune. I'm Guy Steele, inviting you to join me for Sinatra, the Man and the Music, Sunday at 5 on Hawaii Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum.
And I'm Ryan Ozawa, and we're talking to Sunny Bagawalia and Keone Kali, about the evolution of the Office of Information Management and Technology.
And, of course, what are some of the major challenges going forward? And, of course, you can give us a call, and the number is 941-3689 on Oahu, or 877-941-3689 from the Neighbor Islands. And, of course, right before the break, we were talking about open data, and we did get a tweet that came in earlier about a question that Luke Fretwell, who actually runs a magazine called GovFresh, and he kind of asked the question about open data in terms of, you know, normally open data is freely accessible to the public, but there are cases where in Hawaii, the government is actually selling data via HIC, the Hawaii Information Consortium. So there are some data sets that aren't accessible. And is this something that will continue, and, you know, is it still open and accessible in this sort of format? And what I'm describing is there are data sets like, let's say, business registration. In order for you to get the data dump of all the business registration in Hawaii, you have to actually pay for it, which should be kind of an open, accessible database, which anybody should access. I mean, maybe you can give me some comments on that.
Well, as you know, my background in federal government with the Open Data Initiative that was started with the White House and things that went out there, it's a tremendous thing that has changed the world, in my view. We've encountered the same issue there, meaning that I think, first of all, there's a lot of data to be let out, and I don't think it's all. I think we've only hit 5% of the situation. Mm-hmm. I think there's 95% that can be brought out. I think there's a lot of data that inherently, when it's governmental, should come out as governmental, and it's available to the public, and there you go. And then, you know, it has its provenance, and it has its and then you use it, and you can mash it up, visualize it, analyze, visualize, socialize, mm-hmm. and mobilize it. There are some where you can add value to it and then sell that. So I'm okay with that aspect of it, but I feel like eventually, I mean, all the data inherently that's within government belongs to the people. So that, to me, is where it should be. So I really think, first of all, we have to address that problem. So I think that's where, when I said 1144, it sounds impressive, but really there's a lot more data that mm-hmm. should come out, and mm-hmm. I think that should be available. Now, it should also be lined up to some sort of a business problem where you can look at certain things that you can solve. You know, we don't want to do apps and innovation just for that sake. Mm-hmm. It has to be innovation that helps people in their daily lives in doing a digital, working in a digital world where they can actually, you know, conduct business online or get services anywhere, anytime, on any device. So I think all of that, where I see is, I think there's plenty of room for everybody to play in this equation. But my inherent belief is government data is open and should be, it belongs to the people of Hawaii.
Well, my journalist heart loves to hear that as well.
Yes.
Now, Keone, one of the things that you're inheriting and that you're continuing to work on, not just inheriting, is one of the objectives of the IT transformation plan was to kind of reorganize and consolidate IT in the state. And I think having worked with various state departments and such, there's always an IT guy in every office, an IT guy in every department, and they have their own systems. They want to name the servers their way and keep and wire things certain ways. And it almost sounds to me like an insurmountable challenge to have them all playing from the same playbook. So first, you know, how is that going, and where's the next step for you?
Yeah, I think, you know, we're in a very decentralized IT environment in the state. You know, separated not only by, you know, different buildings and departments, but in different islands and, I mean, stuff's, you know, all over the place. So I think in the last 2.5 years, we've done a great, you know, job of through administrative directives and governance to start to bring things into a centralized, you know, function in terms of our procurements and start to review things. The legislature certainly is very supportive of consolidating all of our functions and people into you know, a reorganization plan that has some matrixed roles and some other, you know, hierarchical reporting that make sure that we're accountable for all of the IT spending and for some of the projects that are going on, because some of them have short turnaround deadlines on the funding. So, you know, it's progressing. We are merging, you know, reorganizing and merging sort of the OMT and the ICSD functions. ICSD was traditionally the centralized IT department for the state. It belongs to the Department of Accounting and General Services as a division. So I've been managing that for a little over a year. And we've been working well together on, you know, on a lot of projects and getting some of the job descriptions redone and reclassified and put forth, you know, like I said, an organizational plan that will take some time to get ratified. But we're also working, you know, with other folks like our James Lum that that Sunny mentioned, to work with all the CIOs and IT people in the different departments and have them start coordinating on projects, actually implementing things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to add that in the transformation plan, one of the 20 plans is an HR plan. So if you read it and at oimt.hawaii.gov, you will see that the HR plan clearly said that first OIMT and ICSD would come together, then some of the other departments, then we'd work with DOE, and then we'd eventually work with UH at some point. But my point is that out of 41,000 employees in the state, 743 are in the IT field. And out of that, we only had like 7 in OIMT, and then we got up to 10 or 12. And then about 137 or so in ICSD, and then we got another 32 that we can hire. Mm-hmm. My point to you is that this starts in a very progressive fashion, and first is collaboration, but at some point CUNY is going to need consolidation to go forward. Mm-hmm. And I think we are going in a very nice, organized fashion, and there are 7 phases. We are into phase 3 right now. So it's progressing properly, I think.
You know, we're talking to Sunny Bagawalia. He's the new chief advisor for technology and cybersecurity for the governor. And Keone Kali, who is the new chief information officer for the state of Hawaii. And, of course, if you have any comments or questions about the IT transformation plan here in Hawaii, please feel free to give us a call. The number is 941-3689 on Oahu or 877-941-3689 from the neighbor islands. Now, you know, Sunny, just imagine for a minute that we have all these legislators listening to Bite Marks Cafe. And, of course, you and I know we've walked the halls in the legislature, and we've talked to them about, you know, the importance of things like open data and, of course, IT transformation. And if you were, I mean, I know this is something that they always ask you, which is, Sunny, I mean, if we're going to give you all this money, what is it that you can show that has been, let's say, accomplished by the money that has been given to, let's say, OIMT? I know that what's the challenge is that even though there's some, you know, let's say, you know, apparently, you know, large sums of money, but it's hard to really show what has resulted from that because these are long-term projects. So what is it that you would like to respond to them in terms of, can you show some near-term accomplishments that were resultant from the program so that they can say, wow, okay, you know, the money has been well spent and it is moving us in that right direction?
Yeah, keep in mind that we were 30 to 40 years behind the times. Mm-hmm. We had no plan, no organization, and, you know, we had a pretty an environment that had a lot of challenges, a legacy environment. So, as they say, it was pretty bus up, yeah. So, but I think, first of all, we've launched new program in changing the business environment. We have an ERP acquisition is going on underway. That's a major thing. That system alone will take care of 7 business functions that's going to touch every employee to make it more effective business operations. And it's going to replace 20% of 740 systems in the state. That's amazing in 5 years. So that's a new way of doing finance, new way of doing budgeting, new way of doing HR, everything, right? Tax system modernization. We've already done one where we were able to do returns back. Randy was doing that. Randy Baltimore, the other deputy at the time, was doing that. And the reduction in with tax department collaboration, tax processing and business process ranging was done faster. Another RFP is just about to come out on tax modernization. That talks about our entire revenue for the state, $6 billion coming in right there. So that's a big thing. So these two systems alone right there, we've done, we've helped out in getting that, you know, our RFP and all that done.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We helped out in health, health IT in setting up a vision and how we go forward. Re-engineered business processes in launching 10 business process re-engineering projects where every one of them did small little things. The point is it proved that people can do it. CUNY mentioned the infrastructure for the first time has gone to 99.9% Sigma you know, reliability. So once the foundation is reliable, it works forward. So kudos to him for that. 40 to 60% reduction in software costs. Enterprise security and privacy improving, but a lot more to be done. We got more PUCAs in there. We inherited a challenge, a real mess, and we have done something about it by putting a security operations center, by putting doing an analysis around 17 categories. So we've done a deep analysis, found out where the PUCAs are, and fixed them. Hawaii Broadband Initiative, already a lot of progress in some areas, got some funding to make that happen. And then on the last point on transparency and accountability, not only came out with the award-winning plan, came up with dashboards and data and 101 online services, 63 mobile apps. My point is we have created an ecosystem of energy where everyone's now momentum, working together in a collaborative spirit and getting things done. We have proven that 25 out of the 50 projects that we started already finished, pow, in addition to the organize and plan phase. So we are not only on schedule, we're actually a little bit ahead of schedule. And now thanks to CUNY's leadership going forward, and I'm a strong supporter and recommended him for this thing. I really feel like everyone needs to get behind him now mm-hmm. and keep on going and let's implement. Because Hawaii can do it. That's the key point here. We can do it, but we got to work together and be one unified Hawaii.
Now, Keone, would you what in your time with the office and with your plan to move forward, I'm curious what you see as your biggest challenge. You know, is it lawmakers and funding? Is it internal stakeholders and support? Is it community understanding of what it is that you're trying to do? I mean, what do you think is the highest peak that you have to scale to find success?
Well, I think it's really benchmarked then by delivery of these services. You know, our spending so far, because of budget constraints or other types of things, you know, we have had to do a lot of pilot projects that are very highly scalable. And that strategy was a conscious strategy to put, attach, 18 different areas and make things happen in small pilots that are highly scalable. So we had to spread the money around because we didn't have a whole lot, going with like zero-based budget, starting from zero and getting to this thing. The challenges are really, the good news is we have some of the problems we have, money can solve. We can buy equipment, we can buy stuff, we can implement it, and it, makes things more efficient in a lot of cases. The cultural transformation inside the organization, that's going to take a little bit longer, a couple of years. It takes a while to affect a long-lasting sustainable change in the way that we do business and the way that the employees respond and are trained in different skill sets and new skill sets. That's going to take some time to recover from. So other than those challenges, between funding and the cultural, significance and the core values of the organization to move forward, I really don't see, anything negative. We have received a tremendous amount of support from the legislature and the other directors and the other agencies.
So, Keone, one of the things that Sonny had as his as a benefit was that he had two deputy directors, you and Randy Baltimore. Now, in your new role as the chief information officer, do you see bringing in a couple of deputy directors to help, with some of the day-to-day or, because now it went down from basically 3 to 1.
Yeah. I would use the analogy that we need to get, we kind of need to get lean in order to execute on some of these things. Part of that is really surrounding myself and our team with like a SEAL team of folks, a dozen or so folks get it done, attitude. And you can really get a bunch of projects completed in a quick fashion, show value, and then take on more and build the internal teams up to work with them, to get things more aligned and more momentum going forward.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, if we, our reorganization plan, we kind of submitted it. It's a draft. It's going to take 18 months to get through that particular process internally. But, we are trying to streamline our organization as much as possible so we can be more nimble and responsive in terms of moving with stuff.
Yeah.
We don't have the opportunity to build a large-scale organization at this point in time, mm-hmm. So we're trying to do the best with what we've got.
And sometimes mm-hmm. one head might be better than three, I can see. Now, Sunny, we haven't talked about this. Your new role yeah. as the advisor to the governor for cybersecurity and such will, and it was very much stressed in the announcement and when he spoke of it, is to start to capitalize on your connections and your experience in Washington, D.C. So can you tell us, you know, in your new role, what linkages, what synergies, if I were to use a buzzword, do you foresee now that we've made this progress and you can show it and bring a report to D.C., you know, what do you think you can make happen there?
No, thank you. And thank you for using the word synergy. We use synergy. We use some big words here. And this is a you know, high-class show here. You know? Maybe yeah. symbiosis or something. Yeah? And I'll just say, well, first of all, there's one other point I want to just make on aloha with urgency. You know, that whole point that I made, that phrase has some meaning. You know, we keep the aloha, but we bring some urgency to get it going. And I think that focus is something that CUNY brings.
Mm-hmm.
What I bring to the – let me answer your question directly. I think I said that now that we have a plan – we have a clear action plan to implement, and now we have someone who's going to make that happen and bring the team together. And so we, you know, everyone should support CUNY going forward. One can focus on Hawaii being even on a larger stage, and that's what they were very intrigued. Governor was very intrigued by the idea that I proposed that why not Hawaii being the crossroads of the Pacific in the digital age, in the information age? Why not Hawaii as a key technology hub or a cybersecurity hub, security as a service? Why not take care of our own? We are with an emerging Asia-Pacific region on one side, and then we have United States, and we are right in the middle. Why not Hawaii? Why not Hawaii? So the question is, all these features set up an ecosystem, so why can't we have that? So to make a plan happen to do three functions. One, establish us as a technology hub. What would it take? So, you know, DBET is doing a study right now, and I'm going to help out, but what does it take to kind of make that happen? And then just try to see which industries can survive and do well here. Second is, of course, a cybersecurity hub. I mean, you know, DOD and the other agencies take care of their own, but we are sitting in the other side. How do we get everyone to a certain level here and offer that? So I think, and also encourage everyone to participate in that. So I think that's another area. And third, of course, is public safety, but also from a security and other standpoint. So my job is with, you know, you have 1 degree of separation on the island. Sometimes here I have 1 degree of separation in D.C. I can help certainly because I've served in some high-ranking positions there to go to them and figure out why Hawaii. And let me just say the people in D.C. are very interested in Hawaii in being in the front lines of this new calculus that I've just talked about,
mm-hmm.
that why not Hawaii? And so they're interested in that. So I think we should take advantage of that. And oh, by the way, all of that requires all the things that we're talking about in the transformation plan, requires the Hawaii Broadband Initiative, requires the security and privacy, requires the data centers in Hawaii. You know, all of that stuff is a building block, but why not take it to the next level? And I think that's my job to come up with a strategy and plan. But it's going to require everyone's participation. I'm going to bring in CUNY. I'm going to bring in David Lasner. I'm going to bring in others from industry and Darrell Wong and others and everybody. So I think it's all of us together, and including the public, by the way. I need to bring the public and industry to participate.
So from a logistics standpoint, I mean, are you going to be sort of physically in Washington kind of halftime? Or how do you actually, when you say bring in, because I know part of the question was, how do you interact now with the CIO? Are you forming a committee? Are you, you know, how does that become a, you know, sort of transition from, or actually, how do you bring in whatever contacts you might have in Washington and then share that amongst the local folks that might be there to implement?
So we're already doing that. So we're trying to bring in some people who've got some expertise to really bring in because, like I said, they've got some tremendous expertise. So my job is to set up a sort of a group that allows for open participation but also other people to focus on a committee and come up with a plan together. But I'm also bringing in some people off and on. Now, a lot of people from D.C. cannot travel to Hawaii because, you know, they consider that it's a little bit of a travel situation. But we can certainly work together to make this happen.
Well, we definitely want to keep up with what you're doing in the new role. And, of course, we'll probably be having you come back. Sunny Bhagwalia is the governor's new chief advisor for technology and cybersecurity. And CUNY Kali is the state's new CIO. Thank you for both joining us today.
Mahalo nui loa.
Yeah, mahalo hui ho. Thank you.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week and we'll talk about new changes happening at the High Tech Development Corporation.
And of course, if you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. And if you have any comments or suggestions, email us at feedback@bitemarkscafe.org. And of course, you can also find us on Twitter. I'm at Bite Marks.
You can follow me at Hawaii. Our engineer is David Chung, and our executive producer is Beth Ann Kostovich.
And of course, we'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.